Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
We found trust is always the root issue. It's never a leadership issue. The only reason you follow a leader or not, unless it's a dictator, is trust. It's not a sales issue. The reason I buy or not has something to do with trust.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show. Delighted that you are here. And I am so eager to introduce you to our guest today. His name is David Horsager. David is the CEO of Trust Edge Leadership Institute and a global authority on helping leaders and organizations become the most trusted in their industry. He's a national best-selling author. Some of his previous books include The Trust Edge. He's the inventor of the Enterprise Trust Index, director of one of the nation's foremost trust studies, which publishes every year, The Trust Outlook. And he is the trust expert in residence at High Point University. If you're getting the sense that David is all about trust, you're on the right track. Why am I so eager to introduce you to David? I learn something from David every time we talk about life, about leadership, about business. And so I am confident today is going to be no exception. And I know that you will too. David's worked with all sorts of companies, FedEx, professional sports teams, Toyota, global governments all over the world. And so David, welcome to talk about your new book, Trusted Leader, on leadership without losing your soul.
Hey, thank you so much, David. It's great to be with you. I respect and I'm grateful for your work. You know, even your all your culture work. I've always said the only way to build healthy cultures is build trust, right? Increase trust in the culture. That's how performance goes up. So I think a lot of alignment there, and just grateful for you and grateful to be here.
I really am delighted you're here. So this is a massive book, and we're not going to be able to even scratch it. We'll scratch enough that people are going to want to run out and get this book right away. But before we go there, I have to ask you a question that I ask every guest on the show, which is, can you take us back and tell us about your earliest memory of yourself as a leader?
That's a good question. Earliest memory of myself as a leader. You know, I certainly did plenty of things wrong, but I remember very young, you know, if I go back in my school, I was always like, I'm the class president, the fourth grade, the Benjamin Franklin Stamp Club president, the fifth grade class president, so I was kind of affirmed early on in this way of leading, directing, bringing people together, captain of the football team and some of those kind of things. So I was poorest county in Minnesota. We'd have people out to our farm. My parents would, and I would, right away, they'd just, hey, Dave, go do something. So I'd take them out, and I kind of learned, I think, leadership of, hey, you want to jump on the trampoline? You want to do this? You want to do that? So I think as a kid, there was some of this happening. 4-H youth development, many people think of just ag organization. I took that leadership track, and it transformed me to certainly be a better leader when actually the word of 2,000 kids to go to Israel. So I think of some of that youth, you know, as a young kid learning about leadership. And boy, I still have plenty to learn, but I remember that as a kid at least.
Well, we're all in process. And I love that you went from the stamp club press. And, you know, it makes me think this is a first revelation. This has never been revealed on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul before. So new to the show, but I was the chess club president.
There you go.
Myself. So
I love chess. We should play. I'd like to lose to someone like you.
All right. Well, hey, you know, you never know. I lose to my son now. So, you know, we're all passing it on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, right? Those youthful leadership experiences are so much a part of our development. And like you said, we're still learning. We're still in process. We're here today to talk about Trusted Leader. It's your newest book. It's just hot off the presses, literally dropped just a couple days before this episode is airing. And I've read your previous work, and I told you this before the show started, but for the listeners, I want you to know this is an incredible book. And if you will truly read this, absorb it, starts with a business parable, which is a lot of fun to read, and the journey there, but then the content that follows up, it is an incredible story. And so I'm curious for you, why did you choose to tell this story this way?
Well, one thing we kept noticing is basically people, either they think you have trust or you don't, and it can be actively built. The reason for that story in the beginning is to shift thinking about trust. You know, this goes back, you know, a couple decades, my grad work, all this work on trust. And the first book, Trust Edge, you know, 365 pages, turns out people don't all want to read that much. And we'd learned so much since I wrote that over a decade ago about takeaways, actionable takeaways you can apply tomorrow as a leader around trust. So that first half shifts thinking. Like people think, trust, these days a lot of people say trust is just transparency and vulnerability. And there's truth to that, but some of your kids are so transparent on social media, I don't trust them for a second because confidentiality is also trusted, or you know, takes a long time to build trust, right? Long time. Well, in a moment of crisis, complete strangers can trust each other like that if they're running the same direction. So trust is more complex than people think, and yet it is always the root cause. This is the other reason. We found trust is always the root issue. Without ego, I can say it's never a leadership issue. The only reason you follow a leader or not, unless it's a dictator, is trust. It's not a sales issue. The reason I buy or not has something to do with trust, unless it's a commodity. It's not the only way to amplify a marketing message. You got to increase trust in the message. The only way to deal with the diversity issues of our day, biggest Harvard study shows, diversity on its own pits people against each other. The only way to get the best of diversity, which is fantastic when done right, is increased trust. Then you get the benefits. So seeing that trust is the root issue, our annual research, in fact, one of the pieces of research shows trust, the number one reason people want to work for an organization last year across the U.S., number one reason, ahead of more pay, ahead of more autonomy, ahead of more fun work environment with a ping pong table, you know, is trusted leadership. So people either want to become more trusted as leaders or need to be, or they want to follow trusted leaders. So that first half was this kind of shift of thinking. And the second half is the newest actionable tools of how I can build it tomorrow morning against this 8-pillar framework that's, you know, been revalidated by an outside university again last year as the way that trust is built globally. So there you go.
we'll talk more about those 8 pillars here in a little bit. But yeah. If you're listening to David going, oh my goodness, this guy is passionate, you have no idea. And the commitment to the concept of trust. And so one of the things I want to tease out there is, David, you are fond of saying that leaders spend a lot of time and effort solving the wrong problem.
Right.
And obviously, we already know your answer is going to be, well, the right problem is trust. But tell us more about how are leaders spending time solving the wrong problem?
They're spending time and resources. You know, we talk about lagging versus leading indicators, right? And we want the lag, we want the sales, that's a lagging indicator. We want the retention, that's a lagging indicator. But what's the leading indicator? And people don't see it, right? Once we notice this in companies right away. Why am I passionate about this? You know, my grad work before that, this kind of epiphany around trust, then it led to this grad work, then it led to us using it in companies right away. It was kind of blew some people away that we started increasing trust in one way, that was a leading indicator, and they said they saved $2 to $4 million in attrition costs in 9 months. We did something in a Fortune 50 company, and they said they tripled sales in 90 days, and in 1 year gained 11% market share. That's a big deal. Trust was this lever, the leading indicator, and that's why I say it's never a, you know, a marketing issue, a leadership issue. At the core, trust is always a root issue. And really, you can think about it about anything. Like, you and I have been on the platform around the world speaking. Well, our first job is not to make people laugh or anything. It's to build trust if we want to share anything valuable. If I think of our kids' classroom, the only way to increase learning in a classroom, the leading indicator, is trust, because I have to increase trust either in the content, the teacher, or the psychological safety or trust of the room. Then we get more learning to happen. All of these things, marketing, innovation, that team isn't creative. Why? Well, if they don't trust each other, they won't share ideas, right? So that's one side of it. The other side that keeps coming back is how trust is, a lack of it is your biggest cost. And this goes back to partly that original research, but you know, without research, you can think, what do you mean it's my biggest cost? I thought trust was a soft skill. Maybe the best way to analogize it, good new word for ourselves for the day, don't ask me to spell it, but a lock. Why would I put a lock on something? A lack of trust. A lock is built on a lack of trust. Okay, so what's the cost of that lack of trust? I got to buy the lock. That's money. But now I got to open it every time I go through the gate. That's time. That just cost me. Or a tweet, you know, write a text to someone you trust. How long does that take? Boop. No time at all. Now write a text to someone you don't trust. How long does that take? How are they going to take this? How are they going to, you know, so there's always a cost. And so if they can pull the lever of trust, then attrition, retention, you know, innovation, we can actually start to deal with the real issue. I even say, we'll maybe get to this later when we talk about the pillars. It's never a communication issue. People talk about communication a lot. It never is, ever, ever, ever at the core. It's always a trust issue. And I can explain what I mean by that when we talk about the pillars, but it's never an engagement issue. The only way you build engagement is increased trust. I mean, it could be an engagement issue, but the way, you don't get engagement with engagement. Just same with net promoter score. We kept finding this in the research. You don't get referrals with referrals. The only way is increased trust. Then you get more referrals. So if they can shift thinking about trust and use this framework, they can actually deal with the real issue, which leads to sales or, you know, performance or whatever.
All right, so we're talking with David Horsager, author of Trusted Leader. And David, you're making the case for trust as the crux of everything leadership. You've got the research, you've got the practical tools, which is, you know, we value that highly around here at Let's Grow Leaders. Yeah, and we're going to dive into some of those. So you wrote this parable and this to shift our thinking, to introduce us to some of these concepts as we read through Trusted Leader. Is any of this parable, did any of it come from real life or just your imagination? Oh. Where's this come from?
A whole lot of it came from real life. And then, it's really fun and compelling. I mean, you can think of Maya in the story. It's much like, she's much like my wife, Lisa. And you can think of this brain trust, which is much like this mastermind or accountability group that I have, that I say often, you know, leadership, if you're doing leadership alone, you're doing it wrong. And that's a big message for everybody listening. We have to, you know, build a team around us. And there's several parts of it. I mean, I love to ski. I've had a, you know, ski accident. The guy has an accident, almost loses his company. And really, it was this guide that he came upon in the hospital that helped him, or where he was laid up, that helped him see differently and save his business using trust, but using this 8-pillar framework. But I'll give you one little real experience that early on in the book, and that is, I had this exact thing happen to me. I'm in a boardroom, and it's slightly different worded in the book, but basically, they kept saying to me all morning, I did a half day on trust, and they're like, yeah, we got to do this. If we don't do this, startup tech company, we got to deliver on this or we'll lose all our funding. We got to deliver on this. You're going to deliver. We're delivering on this. We're delivering on this by May 1st. We're delivering. And pretty soon they were saying it so much, I started like, are they really? Like, what's going on? You're saying this so much, I don't believe you, you know? And they were kind of trying to amp each other up, I think, and believe each other. And so I took the leadership team into the boardroom and we talked after this whole keynote to all the employees and half day with them. Okay. So just because I get paid for telling the truth, you may never hire me back, but I want to ask you a question. Everybody says you got to deliver on this, right? You're going to lose the company. You're all going to be gone. I mean, everything's going to tank. If you don't deliver on this, you got to deliver on this, right? CEO, board members. I said, okay, pause for a second. Just shut your eyes if you need to. Give me a 1 out of 10 around the table because something could happen, right? In the next 4 months, you know? So 1 out of 10, you absolutely believe you're going to deliver on this commitment. And we went around the table and 9, 10, and then one young lady had the guts to tell the truth that changed everything. And she said a 3. And of course, then backed up on that person. Well, if you're a three, then my 10 is a six, you know, and all of a sudden they told the truth and we were able to talk about it in a way that actually they got to the truth in time to save the company. Mm. And it was a really monumental moment. And I say it more eloquently and write it more eloquently in the book with edits compared to my speaking today. But this shift of thinking that created trust. And it's one little part of the book that starts that story in the right path of shift of thinking about how trust matters more than ever and how they start to solve it.
Oh, I love that. And it is a powerful story. It is a powerful moment in the book where one character says, "Yo, gosh," and the chief operating officer says, "I've got to revise my 7 down to a 4.
Exactly. Monumental.
Right.
So many people are just going through life not telling the truth, and then they're losing, you know. And
how powerful is it that it's a real life example. It took one person, took one person, and that gave everybody else the psychological safety to say, okay, yeah.
And a massive risk. It wasn't the president, it wasn't the COO, it wasn't in the book, it is, but they were all senior leaders, but this was probably the riskiest move for this person that actually, you know, did it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, we talk a lot about that in courageous cultures, right?
Absolutely.
If everyone, and that's the paradox, if everyone is in the habit of telling the truth, speaking up on behalf of the customer, the employee experience, and you know, solving problems, if that's the norm, it doesn't take courage to do it. But if it's not the norm, it takes a tremendous amount of courage and leadership in order to have that commitment to the truth. That's powerful. Let's dive into one of the things I appreciated about the book, David, is so practical. And so when we get into the 8 pillars, and if you could just run through those 8 pillars, and then I want to dive a little bit more deeply into one or two of them. I've got some follow-up questions for you.
So just for context, I'll give you all 8. And just a reminder, they're denoted by C words, but that doesn't make this some motivational book that whatever. For clarity, they each stand for kind of a research funnel from way back. It was revalidated again last year by this outside university as the way trust is built. So I believe you can solve every organizational leadership issue against these 8 without ego. It doesn't mean I know how. It doesn't mean it's easy. But we contextualize them for, you know, corruption work in East Africa and pro sports teams. And we have people working on 6 continents using this framework. So here's the 8 pillars. So if you buy into that, this case for trust, that a lack of trust is the biggest cost, it's a root issue, how do you actually build trust? Is it just integrity or honesty? Well, it turns out all 8 were important. Here they are. Number 1 is clarity. People trust the clear and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous or the overly complex. And remember, each of these pillars I can talk about all day. There's a whole lot of takeaways. And in the book, we took the newest, quickest take action on takeaways, and they are under each pillar for a leader to use tomorrow morning. And just as an idea, the way I lost 52 pounds in 5 months, that little clarity method, it's in the book now. Of the way that we've seen people triple sales, that's in the book. The spa method, the trust shield, all these. Okay, and number 1, clarity. Number 2 is compassion. What we learned is people trust those that care beyond themselves. I have a hard time being accountable to you or whatever if I don't feel like you care beyond yourself. Number 3 is character. We trust those that do what's right over what's easy. You know, there's a 7-step process we show of how you can build character into a company. People think, oh no, they're done. At 12 years old, people have all the character they have. Many organizations are incentivized against the very character they say they want to have. So number 4, you think character is important? It is. Critical, foundational, but it's not everything, because number 4 is competency. I might trust David to give me, to take my kids to the ball game, right? Because of his character and his compassion. That doesn't mean I will trust him to give me a root canal because of competency. So that's why we have to stay fresh and relevant and capable.
That's a good call, by the way.
Right. Next pillar is commitment. We kept finding people trust those that stay committed in the face of adversity. So, you know, whether it's your first grade teacher or mom or dad or Mandela, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Jesus, or Joan of Arc, people are trusted that commit to something beyond themselves, sometimes to death, right? So commitment. Next pillar is connection. We found that people trust those that are willing to connect and collaborate. So many people, if I go into an organization, by the way, each of these pillars has counterforces. So if I see siloing, I know I might have a counterforce of connection. Just like if I see complexity or ambiguity, I've got a counterforce of clarity. Or if I see any of the isms or hatefulness or apathy, I've got a counterforce to compassion. So this connection and collaboration pillar. The next pillar is contribution. And the number one word that came out of this kind of research funnel is results. We trust those that contribute results or outcomes, performance. So you can't just have compassion and character. You got to contribute results, right? You've got to actually, we have to deliver results, but you can't just contribute results without compassion or character if you want to have this thing we call the trusted or be a trusted leader. Final pillar is consistency. You know, you're trusted for whatever you do consistently. Consistency is the queen and king of the pillars. If you're late all the time, I will in fact trust you to be late, right? So the only way to build a reputation or a brand is sameness. So we can actually take these eight pillars and actually solve the core issue against one of these eight or a multitude of them. And it's always a function of these. And I, like I said, without ego, I hate it when consultants come in and say, oh, it's always, but I mean, the research, it kind of proves it out. So this is where, let me just share about the communication issue. I'll say, people say, we got a communication issue. You never do. Communication is happening all the time. Clear, communication is trusted. Unclear, communication isn't. So it's a clarity issue. Or compassionate communication is trusted. Hateful communication isn't. You got a compassion issue. Or consistent is inconsistent. High character is low character isn't. So when you can define against these, you actually start to solve the real marketing, communication, leadership issue.
And so if you're listening, I hope that you will take a couple of minutes, back up your podcast episode there for just a moment and listen to those eight again. David just went through them quickly, but there is so much value for you to think about. Okay, clarity, compassion, character, competency, commitment, connection, contribution, and consistency. It's a masterclass in leadership, these eight pillars and how they each contribute to trust. And so David just gave you the pro example and the counter example for each one, which is a great starting point. And then that's why I'm encouraging you, get the book and dive in and look at the practical ways to start building in these. But David, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll give you one thing. This week and next week, so when this drops, if you would like, you don't even have to buy the book, but you go trusted leader, not the, just like Facebook, we took the off, right? So www.trustedleaderbook.com, you can get this webcast, kind of this masterclass of this content free if you just sign up in there. And then of course you can grab the book if you'd like, and you get a whole lot of bonuses if you grab the book. But basically I really want this out there, whether or not you feel like it's worth the 20 whatever bucks for the book or not. I believe it changed me. So I believe it can change others. So we put that webcast out there complimentary on this content also to affirm everything that's in the book.
Yeah. And when David says that he wants this out there, regardless, he really means that, right? You are incredibly committed to building a more trustful, trusted, trustworthy world. And the leaders are obviously an incredible part of that. The leadership that everyone listening today, it's not just about your team. It's not just about your family. It's about the world that we're building together. And who doesn't want a world where we can't live with more trust for one another?
Love that.
So David, let's take a little bit deeper dive. I'm going to start personally for you because I'm thinking about this a couple of angles. I'm going to preamble this question. Think about Ellen DeGeneres. So while we're recording, she recently, she has this brand about being kind, and that's kind of what be kind is what she's been known for. Well, then that has been undermined by revelations that in her company and in her production company that it's been anything but kind in that environment. And so as a leader, I know that as somebody who is an author and, seven things your team needs to hear you say and winning well and courageous cultures and so on. And people tell us this when they come for employment and join our business is I'm looking forward to your leadership, right? Yeah. There is, that pressure, and it's a positive pressure, but that expectation that you're going to live up to your own message. And I'm a human being.
Absolutely.
And there are times I have to stop and go, oh man, I got to go reread my own book. Yeah. And I need to up my game and recommit in a particular area. So I'm curious for you, as you think about these eight pillars, which one or two do you find you have to be the most intentional about yourself?
I'm going to tell you a few things right here. Number one, I'm very open with my organization, and I've got a significant team. Like, I am not perfect at any of these. I just know they're true from the research, and my family knows well. Let me tell you, you get teenagers, you'll learn real quick, right? So I believe in this stuff. I'm passionate about it. People see that authentically, and yet I'm clear that I'm not perfect at any of this. I can see my downfalls. One of the challenging ones that actually, that's one of the biggest challenge for me is clarity. So my executive assistant now, she's moved up and I have another executive assistant, but they're both, I mean, they're all so important, but anyway, and she's really good at coming back to me and sit and going through my own methodology. You can learn it in the book, ODC, not OCD, ODC. But whenever we ask for something, we want to make sure we have a clear outcome, a clear deadline, and clarifying questions. And like, okay, what's the ODC on that? Because I'll say it. I taught that. I created that, but I won't do it, right? And so clarity is challenging when you're moving as fast as we are and you're driven about this work and whatever. So that's one. I make another comment on the Ellen, because you got to get a couple different things here. People often ask me, how do you rebuild trust once you've lost it? Because you've made a mistake. I bet I have for sure. How do you rebuild it, right? I'll make one comment here, because we have a 10-step process for how you rebuild trust. And you're big oil company and had a huge oil spill. There's a process to rebuild trust. And frankly, I believe a decade ago or so, BP did it well. So that's why I use that again. There's plenty of people that haven't done it well. But let's take personally, whether you're an individual or an organization, it actually comes down to one thing. Rebuilding trust, whether it's Ellen or you or me, it comes down to one thing, and it is not the apology. People think it's the apology. It never is. You never rebuild trust on the apology. I had a CEO from the Netherlands come up to me and said, David, he'd been in America for a couple of weeks. I said to him, what's the first thing you notice in America? And he said, you want to know the truth, David? I said, yeah. He said, you got a bunch of lying apologizers in America. He said, I got this guy on this team. He said, every day he comes in, he says, I'm sorry, I'm late. I'm like, no, you're not. You're late every single day, right? So the doesn't mean you don't need to apologize sincerely to open the communication and show your heart and empathize. But the only way to rebuild trust, only way, is to make and keep a new commitment. So this is a message for those of you leaders. You will not be trusted again unless you make and keep a new commitment. The only way to rebuild it, if Ellen goes in and says, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we say this, but we're not very good. But here's what I'm going to do about it. I'm not perfect. You're going to see these three things I'm going to start to do differently, or whoever it is. And I'm speaking to myself or anybody here. So it's the same with, we all hear the idea, love your neighbors yourself. People that don't love themselves at all, they have a hard time building, loving others, right? It's the same with trust. You don't trust yourself at all. You have a hard time building it on a team or anywhere else. And the reason you don't trust yourself is because you don't make and keep commitments. Those that make and keep commitments, they start to trust themselves, and then they're able to do it with others.
Yeah, it's the behavior that matters. I mean, so apology opens the door to the relationship, to the communication. Absolutely. And it's the follow-up behavior. You got to show it. So, let's apply these pillars on a contemporary topic that is on the minds, hearts and minds of leaders everywhere, I hope, right now. And that you mentioned on some level earlier in your comments, and that is inclusive leadership. And you made a kind of, I'm paraphrasing here, but you basically said, if I've got it right, that strictly speaking, diversity can divide, but inclusion requires trust. And I may be paraphrasing what you said, but help us understand if we want to create a more inclusive culture, more inclusive environment, mm-hmm. and invite everybody to the party on our teams, mm-hmm. where does trust play into that? And how do we go about that?
It's everything. And I created trust in diversity and inclusion with my African-American colleague, Milton. And it better if we were here talking about this together, because it would give a more full view, right? But we wish people wouldn't have diversity and inclusion initiatives. We wish they'd have trust, inclusion, and equity initiatives, because if they focus on diversity, they tend to get more of it. If they focus on trust, they tend to get more of it. Now, you do need these initiatives, and the heart behind them is critical. But the point is, we have to somehow focus on trust. The research shows you can just have more diversity. And even though we all know, by the way, let me just be real clear here. Diversity is health. The right kind of diversity is healthy, right? The right kind of diversity brings different perspectives, backgrounds. The research shows it. But diversity on its own, without a commonality, without trust, doesn't work. So we have to focus on trust with diversity, not just diversity. An example would be, we can't be diverse in every way. And I'm not talking about color of skin. I'm talking about, as an example, in an organization, if I have an absolutely clear vision, or we have absolutely clear values, we're not diverse in our values. These are our values. We want people to look differently, that bring different perspectives, but we have to be absolutely clear about who we are in our values. Then we pull in people that are different in many different ways that bring the best of, from a diverse perspective. Sometimes people think be diverse in every thinking possible way. And actually, we have to have sameness, but it's not color of skin. It's not a whole lot of other ways people want to be the same. That diversity in many of those ways brings the best of the world together. But you have to have a sameness, which could be values, could be vision, could be some other things, so that your culture has an anchor point of sameness that we can build trust around.
That commitment to how we do things here, right, what we're committed to, what we're trying to achieve together, mm-hmm, and our ability to rely on one another to do that is table stakes for any team, right?
Now, we have a big thing that we're working against. I mean, our study shows, one, the study I noted about the Harvard Putnam study that shows diversity on its own pits people against each other is noted in the book, and it's actually noted in my first book, so if you want to find it. We do have a problem, you and I know it, and that is our study, our Trust Outlook annual study shows, if I'm remembering this right, it's approximately this anyway, about 7 out of 10 people believe diversity is important to high-performing teams. And yet about 7 out of 10 people want to work with teams with people that look just like themselves.
Mm.
That's a big problem.
That's a major problem.
We're not talking about diversity that way. We're talking about we want diverse thinking. We have to build it around a culture of oneness. That's how we can build trust.
Mm. Shared understanding.
Yep.
Well, David, we have just barely begun talking about trusted leader and there's so much more in this book. So I want to encourage people to go out and get it. You mentioned trustedleader.com earlier.
Trusted Leader. We couldn't get a hold of that, but trustedleaderbook.com. You got to put book there. You can find out about us and find your way there from still trustedge.com or davidhorshager.com. But right now, trustedleaderbook.com. If you do grab a book or share that, you get a whole lot of extras. Even if you don't buy the book, there's a masterclass piece there that people can watch and gain a whole lot of ideas of how they can use this tomorrow morning.
Okay, so David is humbly saying he's got the thing that you can watch and get a lot of things and be able to use it. And this David is telling you, buy the dang book. It's worth it and it will benefit your leadership. I promise you that that's the case. And so you've got the website, trustedleaderbook.com. David, for somebody who's listening going, okay, got it. We've got about 60 seconds left. What are the practical next steps? I can go, I can watch the thing, I can get the book, but if I want to tomorrow work on my own leadership and be a more trusted leader, where do I start?
Well, 60 seconds, tough. This is, by the way, this happens a lot to me, David. It's like, we got this big trust issue, David. You got 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Can you just change this corruption issue with trust? And we got it's 100 years old. We got 6 minutes.
You got a magic wand to wave, right?
I'll make a couple comments. Number one, start to understand the language of that 8-pillar framework, because once you start to see that, you start to see the real issue. And so you can solve against that real issue. Then ask, and the process is in the book, but start asking this question. How, until you can do something today or tomorrow. How. Not, how could I do some? Okay, then how could I do that? Then how could I do that? I mean, this is the same with my weight loss, right? One of the ideas was, okay, I got to eat less, exercise more. That's not clear. Okay, how am I going to take in less calories? Okay, how, until I stopped on the airplane ordering a Coke and change it to a Fresca without calories, right? Coke, 2 Cokes was a meal. So how, until I can apply it today or tomorrow. And that's what you can do when you get some of these ideas of the book. You can how, until you can apply something today or tomorrow that starts to build that pillar that has the result you want. So that's one. Secondly, I would say it's the little things done consistently that make the biggest difference. So this helps you get a little thing you can do consistently. And finally, I would say the big challenge with this work is people can manipulate the pillars to look trusted without actually being worthy of it. At the end of the day, what I'm really hoping for is people are actually trustworthy leaders, worthy of trust. That's authentic trusted leaders. That's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm trying to be myself. So,
and David, I appreciate that invitation and that challenge for all of us and your commitment to the work that you do. I hope as you're listening today that you will take that to heart. Take a look at the pillars. You can, in the book, towards the end, I think it's chapter 31, there's next steps. You can actually evaluate yourself and your own team organization with regard to the pillars and pick some of those practical next steps. And David lays that all out there for you. Do that. and you're on your way to being the leader you'd want your boss to be. David, thanks again for being on the show with us today and sharing all of the wisdom and insights.
Thank you so much. Good to share a good name together too, David.
Absolutely. Love having the David factor on there. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.